One of the most influential LGBT documentaries of all time is The Queen. Frank Simon and Flawless Sabrina's 1968 film that takes the viewer behind the scenes of a tumultuous drag pageant held in New York City 2 years before the Stonewall riots.
The landmark film, which has now been remastered and is available on Netflix, inspired the likes of Paris is Burning, Wigstock, Pose, and RuPaul's Drag Race. Today, Miss Gay US of A pageant winner Aurora Sexton joins us to look at drag pageants over the decades and what it takes for a gal to make it big in the pageant circuit.
Plus, RuPaul brings queer and drag culture to Saturday Night Live and gives Pete Davidson a drag makeover.
Aurora's Let Them Eat Cake, Diary of a First Lady.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people just like you.
Become a member and access thousands of our legendary podcasts at feastoffun.com/plus and help make Feast of Fun available to people everywhere around the world. And speaking of legends, before we begin, let's listen to Crystal LaBeija read Harlow to Filth. After losing the pageant in the 1968 documentary, The Queen.
She is not beautiful, has no qualification,
and
she's body
deserved it? Do you think she deserved it?
You know she didn't deserve it. All of them, the judges knew it too.
But
she was terrible.
She
and didn't her explanation
it.
For why she wanted the money. To put it in the bank. She's not getting any money because Sabrina's not going to pay her. They're good friends. It's only publicity, and it's bad publicity for Harlow and all the rest because I'm declared as one of the uglier people of the world. Look at Harlow's outfit. That is funny. Don't bother her. Don't bother her. It's not Harlow's fault. It's not her fault.
I know it's not her fault.
Harlow has nothing. She can't help it because you're beautiful and you're young. You deserve to have the best in life, but you didn't deserve... Missy, I don't say she's not beautiful, but she wasn't looking beautiful tonight. She doesn't equal me. Look at her makeup. It's terrible.
Hello.
Hi, is this Aurora Sexton?
Why, do I owe you money?
How much you got?
I don't got shit, honey.
How are you today, Aurora?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, thank you. Thank you for coming back on Feast of Fun in the same time in 1 week.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been so long.
For people who don't know, we taped this amazing show with Aurora Sexton, and it was completely lost. In the time that we taped the show, RuPaul got on Saturday Night Live, and Trump was impeached, and all kinds of things happened. We loved talking to you so much, and it was such a good show. We wanted to have you give us a second chance to record it again.
I'll have to think about it.
Based on your pageant photos, I think you'd be sitting on a chaise lounge eating strawberries and drinking champagne.
We'll go with that.
What's your everyday life like? Because I imagine for people who don't know you personally, they think you might be this pageant goddess princess sitting waiting for her suitors to come in and bring boxes of chocolates and roses.
Well, that's half true. I live a pretty normal life of whatever you call normal. I'm at home right now in Los Angeles. I live in the Koreatown neighborhood, which is a really cool pocket of restaurants and bars and obviously Korean people.
You won the Miss US of A pageant in 2016.
I did.
Which is one of the largest drag queen pageants in the world, right?
Yes.
What exactly are they like looking for in terms of who wins and what does it take?
It just takes a good solid package and presenting your absolute best. Miss Gay US of A has been around, I believe, since 1980. 1985, and it was one of the first national pageants that allowed entertainers with hormones and or body work to compete. So trans women, you know, were accepted, whereas, you know, pageants like Miss Gay America at the time were not allowing trans women to compete.
And what year did they do this exactly?
I believe they started in 1980 or 1985. I'm not sure.
So it was pretty early then, huh? Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. A lot of those pageants were born in the late 70s, early 80s. Miss Gay America has been around since the early 70s, Miss Continental since 1980, and then Entertainer of the Year, followed that, Miss Gay US of A. So those are the big four contests that have been around the longest.
And you kind of have to navigate some tricky waters with some of these pageants, because like you said, like some of them is like you couldn't have hormones or do any kind of body work, and then other places like Miss Continental, I think just in the past couple of years has finally been like pretty much anyone can compete. But before, there was a lot of emphasis on what kind of plumbing you had below. They really got into this people's business, didn't they?
Well, they did become, you know, more inclusive this past year, allowing trans women who have undergone full sex change or full sex reassignment to compete, which I think is great. You know, the more places that trans people can be visible, the better. You don't have to be have surgery to be a trans person. So as we know, trans is a state of mind. And not everybody wants to or is able to undergo those kind of procedures to match their outside to the inside. But yeah, Miss Continental was the first pageant right after Miss Gay America to come up, because Miss Gay America, they felt, were discriminatory towards trans women who were also showgirls in the industry. And so Miss Continental gave them a venue to showcase their talents, and it exploded into a huge nationwide arena for trans women. And it made a lot of them very famous.
People say that it is the biggest pageant of its kind in the world, right? Compared to the other ones?
It definitely is one of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, in the United States, it's definitely one of the biggest. You know, outside the United States, you have Miss International Queen in Pattaya, Thailand, where contestants from all over the world come to compete. And actually, Giselle Barbie Royale, she's a former Miss Continental. She lives in Florida, but she's the reigning Miss International Queen right now. Mm. And the first woman of color to ever win, too. So it was a very special honor for her to bring back to the U.S.
For people who haven't been to these pageants, what are they like?
Well, I mean, it's an overall package that you have to present. For example, in Miss Gay US of A, there's only three categories. There's personal interview, which you go in one by one for 7 minutes in front of a panel of judges, and they basically just ask you questions about yourself and how you would reign as their title holder. And then you have evening gown competition, which is pretty self-explanatory. And then talent is kind of a free-for-all, whatever you want. I mean, there's varying rules depending on which pageant you're in, but most of them are no fire, no glitter, no water, no live animals.
No ping-pongs.
And all because people have used them before and something happened.
So no ping-pong balls on stage.
No, although I have seen some pretty ballsy, no pun intended, things done for talent competition.
Like what?
I saw, it was years ago in Texas. One girl did a strip tease for talent.
Completely nude?
Just about. Yeah,
oh,
she
wow.
stripped down. She stripped down to pasties and coochie pasties and which, you know what, stripping is an art form. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't very good. And it wasn't.
And you're like, this is the beauty pageant kind of. It doesn't.
It's
necessarily,
just not the place.
Yeah,
you know?
It's not the place. I mean, I think these weren't necessarily for drag pageants or, you know, pageants at all, but for a drag show. My two favorite things that I've ever heard is somebody tried to do a Jiffy Pop popcorn thing on their head, and they used one of those like lighter things underneath it to get it to pop.
Like a sterno.
But it was a sterno, but it got so hot it started to like melt the wig,
and
the
person
like, yeah, and they burned. They had like third degree burns on their head. And then another queen took one of those those M&M candy cane things. You know, have you ever seen those? They're like plastic and they're filled. And
Where she put it?
She put it where you think she put it. And then she, you know, and so the show got delayed though. So it was sitting up there for like an hour, right? And then when she went to take the top off, she expected like all these M&Ms to just like scatter all over the stage, but they came out in like clumps because it had melted.
So instead of bloop, bloop, bloop.
Are you sure it was melted chocolate?
I hope so.
I hope so. At least that's according to the book.
It smelled delicious. So everyone's very excited about The Queen, the 1968 documentary directed by Frank Simon. It's been remastered by the Harry Ransom Center at the University of Texas in Austin and is now available on Netflix for anyone with a Netflix membership to see. And that film is so instrumental in capturing drag pageants in an era before the Stonewall riots that sparked the modern gay rights movement. It also inspired so many wonderful films and television shows like Paris is Burning, Pose, and RuPaul's Drag Race. In terms of the contest, I guess it's actually capturing Flawless Sabrina's own drag pageant that she put together and hosted, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And the crux of The Queen and what we heard in the beginning was Crystal LaBeija was a drag queen of color who didn't win and is furious that they gave it to this one drag queen named Harlow, who in the beginning of the film, we see her showing up with nothing but a silver unitard and a suitcase and not even a wig.
Still happens.
And it's, I guess it feels just as relevant today as it did in 1968, doesn't it?
Oh, very much so. And it's an amazing time capsule to be able to look back at and see where we came from and how certainly how social issues changed, you know, with respect for people of color, having it be a more even playing field. Actually, interestingly enough, Harlow was trans, and a few years after she won that contest, she completed her sexual reassignment surgery in 1972. So it kind of just shows that we've always been there, and we've always been in the mix.
Because they don't really show that very much in The Queen. I think most of the conversation among the contestants in The Queen talking about their personal experience, a lot of them were just like, I don't want to be a woman. I want to be a man. This is what I just do for like fun and that kind of stuff.
But I don't think Harlow actually talks about it.
No, she doesn't.
It strikes me that she's hiding a secret, and that might be that she feels that she's transgender. And then she, you know, and I think the reality for a lot of trans women, and we've doing this podcast, we've gotten two schools of thoughts. They're the trans women whose entry into to their authentic selves came through drag, came through performance. And then there are other ones who came through the internet or through other means. Mm-hmm. And they resent the trans women who are drag queens because they feel they confuse the issue and demean what it means to be a woman and a trans woman.
Yeah, it can be quite a conundrum depending on what side of the argument you're on. Personally, for myself, I always knew, you know, that I was different. You know, the story always starts that way. But I didn't really know what it was about me until I started doing drag, and I felt more comfortable as a woman. I was happier. And then, you know, we figured out that I was transgender. And I remember, you know, being in therapy and on medications when I was a little kid. And I asked my grandmother years later, I was like, why was I always talking to doctors? And she said, well, it's because you wanted to wear dresses. And we didn't know anything about it. Transgender wasn't a word at the time. And I think even going back further, you know, The Queen was filmed in 1967. The first sex change, you know, that made national headlines was Christine Jorgensen in the 1940s. So, you know, it's been a long and slow process for trans people to gain visibility and certainly to gain a seat at the table. You know, 10, 15 years ago, we were, you know, is it a man or a woman? Screaming man on Maury Povich and Jerry Springer. And a lot of the girls from Chicago, you know, Monica Monroe, Mimi Marx, Chili Pepper, Cezanne, you know, they would all go on Jerry Springer and try to have serious conversations about what it was to be a trans woman, a trans person. But at the same time, you know, they were all so entertaining in a field where their job description is female impersonator, female illusionist. If that's your job, I mean, it was my job for many years, you have to learn to differentiate the two. During the day, you know, Aurora, you know, I lead a pretty low-key life. I work as an art director. I have two cats. I'm not a cat lady any more than that, and that'd be a problem. I, you know, have a boyfriend, and you know, I just do normal things in society. And then at night, I throw on a crap ton of war paint, and I drag 80-pound costumes across town, and I go out and have a good time and entertain a lot of young people.
How often a week are you performing in costume?
Not as much as I used to. The whole time I lived in Chicago, I was working full-time at all the clubs. And in 2011, I won a national contest called National Entertainer of the Year. And the owners of a club were there and offered me a full-time job in Nashville. So I moved down there to work at Play Dance Bar. If you ever get a chance to go to Nashville, please check it out. It's so much fun. And I had a great run there. I made a lot of money, met a lot of celebrities. But I was also doing drag 4 nights a week, 3 shows a night, 7 numbers plus productions. I was, you know, getting burned out. So when I decided to move to Los Angeles, I decided to step back from it and focus on mainstream film and television. And now I'm slowly getting back into it. I'd say I do, you know, maybe 3 to 5 shows a month, if that.
What was Alyssa Edwards and Coco Montrese, who are sort of famous pageant girls, and Roxy Andrews? What were they like in the scene before they got on Drag Race? Because you're pretty familiar with Alyssa Edwards.
Awful people. Awful.
No. Do tell.
No. Actually, the first pageant I ever competed in was Miss Gay US of A. I was like 20, 21. I placed 24th out of like 50-some contestants. And that was the year Alyssa won. And Alyssa is exactly the same person today as she was then. She's always been crazy. She will always be crazy. But she is. But I love that about her because she's brutally, unapologetically her. And a good person. She is a good person.
Well, what is it exactly that Alyssa Edwards is doing behind the scenes that you would describe as?
She's just so full of energy.
Uh-huh.
Like there's no off button.
Okay.
Like she's just constantly going and going and going. You know, like exactly what you see is what you get.
So in terms of, she's able to concentrate and focus on a task, obviously, because she works as a dance instructor with children. You know, so do you think that maybe she's playing it up to some degree in the pageant scene or on television?
I mean, what is a queen to be but high drama? And you know,
I love that
and she gives you plenty of that. But I think she gives more of, you know, the drama on stage and performance and costuming and personality and attitude and just that whole sphere of what makes Alyssa Alyssa, as opposed to being messy or, you know, starting fights and being catty. I mean, you know, she's catty all day long, but, you know, in an entertaining way, not in a malicious.
So you don't think when she said to Coco Montrese, look, girl, look at yourself. Look how orange you look.
Yeah, she read the dog shit out of her.
And was that, I mean.
And Coco read her back.
Miss Coco, you're going to have to do a little bit more pink in the eye.
Well, you concerned about what's going on over here when you need to be worried about what's going on over there with that same makeup you've been running on the runway every single time.
Girl, look how orange you fucking look, girl. You're
Don't
used to being
with
my
me.
Runner-up and being behind me. Don't switch the game up now, mama.
Okay, now, Miss Alyssa. Now you pushed it.
Miss Coco, you're taking it personal. I'm joking.
Oh, now I'm not joking, bitch.
I'm not joking, bitch. I think it's what she said afterwards. Yeah. But why did she, like, I guess I'm trying to, like, wrap myself on the idea that Alyssa Edwards is very much a very dynamic, very vivacious, very wild personality.
Very.
And sometimes when we're that, we get rejected a lot by society. And being on this podcast or on television or reality TV show, for a lot of entertainers who are that, carry that quality, it's nerve-wracking because they're worried that they're going to be seen. What if they're not going to like me?
Well, and in a setting like that, in a reality setting like that, the best thing you can be is yourself.
which is even more painful when they don't like you, right? You know, and that's what some of my friends say. It's like, you know, create a character that you can be on reality television. So if people reject you, if you got a bad edit, or you feel like you did well, poorly on it, it's not a personal attack on you. And I think that's the tricky thing about being in those kind of situations and those pageants too, is that they're not just judging your art, they're judging you as a human being.
Absolutely. You have to have a thick skin going into those. You know, if anything, you lose way more than you win, and it definitely teaches you how to be a gracious loser, a good winner. And, you know, pageants prepare you for a lot of things in life. You know, for I could walk into any job interview and know that I'd get it because of the skills I learned through being in a pageant.
I'm on to be a brain surgeon.
I might need a little more training for that. But.
Well, our friend worked on a documentary, and or I think it was a TV show or a documentary, and it focused on the pageant world for women who grew up and did pageants as little girls and then gone on to become beauty queens and whatnot. And they looked at them like 20 years later to see like what these people are like. And my friend, you know, she's a riot girl and has she had these expectations that these women were going to be all like Stepford wives. And she was just like, I couldn't believe it. You know, here are these beauty queens. They went on to become doctors and lawyers and professional women. And she was a little surprised because, you know, she grew up very punk rock and she just thought that these women were just kind of like bowing down to the patriarchy and just being, you know, like going to be somebody's house, you know, a housewife or a mom or Marywell. And these women really did it for themselves and went on to create great lives.
Well, I mean, it just goes to show you can be anything that you put your mind to if you want it bad enough.
Well, do you feel like your experiences as in being a pageant contestant so it transformed you for the better as a person?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
You were saying in our last interview that didn't make it that in a decade, you went through a transformation from not losing to winning the pageant. And I'm wondering, like, upon retrospect, what exactly changed in you?
I think everything changed. I mean, a decade is a long time to experience life, gain wisdom, grow as a person and mature. When the first time I competed, you know, when I was 20, I didn't know myself and I didn't know what I was capable of as an entertainer, as opposed to going back, you know, over a decade later, I won every single category. I swept the entire pageant and I had a wonderful year. Because I knew myself and I knew my strengths. I played to those. And it also gave me the wisdom and maturity to be a capable leader and a title holder and actually do good things that benefited not only myself, but my community while I was on the road.
Now, when you won, did you have anybody like Crystal Olivasia be like, look at her? Not saying she doesn't look beautiful. She doesn't look beautiful tonight.
I'm sure somewhere in the hotel, somebody had something to say.
But they didn't scream it to your face?
No, absolutely not. It was a beautiful night. My mom and my sister were there and a lot of my close friends. And I couldn't have asked for a more picture-perfect win.
Well, I mean, people in Chicago, they've loved you for so long, for, you know, however long you've lived here, and have had such great respect for you and your talents.
And I love them. I miss Chicago so much.
But I do notice, like, even in hearing you talking about the pageants, is that you sound like a pageant contestant, like very measured, very polite. There's no speaking off the cuff or, you know, losing your shit, getting angry.
Oh, that happens plenty, doll. Trust me.
So do you think your experience in being in pageants help you manage your anger better?
Well, I think that comes with being a public figure. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when you're in the pageants, you want to remain humble and respectful and measured, as they say. You don't want to rock the boat too much. But now that I'm semi-retired from all that and I have different priorities in my life, I do speak my mind a lot more freely. I'm a lot more grounded in, you know, my beliefs politically and not afraid to speak my mind about those things.
Yeah, because you just a one-woman show with many characters, many first ladies. As Melania Trump and other first ladies.
I did.
In Provincetown called Let Them Eat Cake, Diary of a First Lady. You're such a completely different person as Melania Trump.
I remember the night that Trump won. I was in Nashville at a bar called Tribe. And, you know, we're all just sitting there waiting to celebrate Hillary's win. And then we saw things just going south. And just, it was like somebody died. The whole atmosphere came down. And me and my friend, we were like, this is depressing. Let's get the fuck out of here. And we just went home and drank ourselves silly. I got very angry because how could such a disgusting, revolting, horrid man become the leader of the free world? And, you know, obviously on social media, everybody's raging. But that's not enough to create real change. That's not enough to change hearts and minds. And so I decided for my protest that I would use my art. And so I wrote a show from Melania's point of view. I mean, because by all accounts, she was absolutely miserable. She didn't want this. And her life had just become a living hell, becoming the First Lady of the United States.
Doesn't she strike you more that she's inconvenienced than upset? She'd rather be shopping and designing jewelry in her penthouse somewhere. We were hearing news stories that Melania didn't want to live in the White House.
Yeah, well, and actually, she didn't move into the White House until something like 8 months after the inauguration, because she wanted Barron to finish out the school year in New York. So she stayed behind in New York. But it was heavily rumored that she just didn't want to leave, which, of course, was creating a huge headache for the people of New York because the police presence there, traffic tied up, streets blocked off, and the city of New York was paying out of pocket for their personal protection and fortifying Trump Tower.
Yeah.
She's a very mysterious, interesting figure. And I just thought she was worth exploring. So when I started diving into writing the show, I obviously had to study her background, study the Trumps, you know, going back their years in business and, you know, their social network. And they really are terrible people. They are the worst. They are the worst people that could have ever gotten into the White House.
Is Melania a terrible person? I know her husband is. Do you feel, is she terrible just because she supports him, or is she terrible in her own right?
Well, a little of both. You know, it's easy to feel sorry for her because you see how brooding her husband is and how he treats her in public. And you must think, well, God, he must treat her so badly. She's obviously suffering, which I believe is true. What I also believe is true is that she's gone on TV shows by herself, and she's publicly advocated for Barack Obama's birth certificate. Trump started that whole birther movement against Obama to prove that he was a citizen of the United States, and she was right on board with it. When you wear jackets that say, I really don't care, do you, to visit a detention facility for migrant children who've been ripped away from their families, that's so beyond the pale of tone deaf. And running a Be Best campaign to fight social online bullying when your husband is the biggest bully in the world, it's just very hypocritical.
Yeah, it's like a big finger to the middle finger to people, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, staying behind the walls of the White House and not going in public doesn't do her any favors. It just creates more fodder. There's actually a book coming out about her this month, and it's called Free Melania. And the woman that wrote it has actually granted access to the White House, interviews with Melania and her inner circle, friends of hers. And when the preview of the book was sent to them, I guess Melania hated it. And her spokeswoman, Stephanie Grisham, came out and trashed it, and because it tells the truth. Mm. Because it's they don't want the truth about anything to come out. They have created this public perception, you know, of themselves over the years that is so just rich and untouchable. They worked very hard to craft their public images. And now as president and as first lady, that's completely out of their hands.
Be best is grammatically incorrect. It's bullying the English language itself. It should be your best, right?
It should.
Amazingly enough, there's quite a few drag queens that are actually Republicans and rabid Trump supporters. What do you make of them?
You know, this is America. You have a right to speak your mind. You have a right to believe what you want and support whatever political party you wish. However, that does not mean you are free from criticism for it, especially when you are supporting somebody whose policies directly affect our community in a negative way. The few queens that I have seen that are those hardcore Trump-supporting Republicans, you know, they're a few fries short of a happy meal to begin with. So it's sad as it is to say, it kind of goes in character with, you know, who they are as people already.
I really want to talk about the queen because we haven't really touched on it too much. In the film, it's narrated by a drag queen named Flawless Sabrina.
Yes, and she was flawless.
She's the grandmama.
She's the mother of International Crisis, and then International Crisis is the mother to our friend Perfidia.
And Perfidia, for people who are not familiar, she was on Cooking with Drag Queens, but also she's well known as a hairstylist on Broadway and was involved in Wigstock and also did a lot of wigs for many of the Rue girls on RuPaul's Drag Race, including Bob the Drag Queen, and most recently... there's this purple wig that's being circulated on the internet. I'm not sure.
I forget who it's for.
But. Yeah, but I said it's like Grimace is shook. And she's, you know, known as a big wig stylist. And I think what's the queen is interesting is that a lot of these drag queens also, you know, House of LaBeija, Crystal LaBeija, and Pepper LaBeija, a young Pepper LaBeija, who is also in Paris is Burning, make their presence in the film.
What's wonderful about this documentary is you have it ends on that note with Crystal LaBeija really calling out Harlow, saying, look at her. I'm not saying she's not beautiful, but look at her makeup. It's terrible. She didn't look beautiful tonight. She shouldn't have won. But then early on in the thing, you know, you hear Flawless Sabrina explaining the rules and like looks are only 10%. You know, of what
right.
it is. And so,
right.
You know, it's so here you have Harlow who showed up with just a suitcase, didn't have a wig, even have a wig. They had to like go out and do like a shopping emergency.
It was a wig emergency.
A wig emergency.
They had to call all the wig stores. And in 1968, I imagine in New York City, it must have been hard to get like a wig ready for a pageant.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, a lot of wigs at the time probably were, you know, salt and pepper mm-hmm. or granny mm-hmm. lady wigs mm-hmm. or wigs for women who are struggling with their hair. And it was not that necessarily wigs that were designed to be for performances, for showcasing.
Oh, I'm sure. But I mean, it's New York. You can get anything in New York.
1968?
Sure. You know, there's a lot of people who wore wigs in 1968.
It's 1968, dearies. It's not 1948.
And I'm sure that they still would pile one wig on top of another wig after another wig and just, you know, pile it high and make it big. And they certainly knew how to rat up hair in the 60s, all those hair hoppers.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
But I just love how it's like, you know, the documentary opens on it. Like, this is what you need to make it win. And then it kind of like references it towards the end. Like, there's that foreshadowing. And that's kind of like, and you see the whole drama unfold of the whole pageant scene.
Yeah. Well, you know. When you go into a pageant, you go in already knowing that there's only one person that can win. So that's just something you have to accept. You know, it's like playing the lottery. But, you know, aside from that, there's also a panel of judges, you know, who judge you. Obviously Harlow didn't crown herself.
Well, she was a protege of Flawless Sabrina, so she may have been wanting to lift her daughter up. And so she had a relationship with her that preceded the pageant.
Trust me, those things happen all the time. But at the end of the night, you know, you have to impress not only the seven people, but, you know, the audience has to believe it as well. Mm-hmm. Because trust me, when there's a pageant that is rigatoni and it is blatantly obvious. So, God, one of my favorite stories. So, Sable Chanel, she was a huge name back in the 90s. She was Miss Gay US of A in 92. But she went down to Miami and competed for this. It was like the biggest pageant in Miami at the time. Well, she won, or she was crowned, and the audience went berserk because the girl that they thought should have won didn't. So they went to throwing tables, chairs, glasses. I mean, they had to lock Sable and her husband in a back room, shove furniture up against the door so that these people didn't like kill them. I've heard of other pageants where, you know, girls didn't win and their people started macing, you know, the whole front row. And I've been at pageants where, you know, where the whole crowd was just booing, you know, and it's honestly sad and unfortunate for the person that's crowned, because in their head, they came to the pageant like everybody else. They presented a package like everybody else, hoping that they were going to win. And to have your win, you know, ruined like that is a horrible thing.
Wow, that's incredible. That's incredible. People take these things very, very seriously.
Incredibly. Very seriously. Well, there's a lot of time and money invested, you know, as well as, you know, the time you take. I mean, it's your art.
Now, I'm sure with the drag pageants, there's a lot of sisterly love. There's people that really take care of each other, help each other with their makeup. And they're like, you know, like, here, you can borrow this or you need this. You have whole teams putting together. There's all sorts of love involved in it and respect for each other.
There is lots of
that. We don't
want
to hear any about that. We want to hear we want to hear about the ground up glass and
the
makeup.
Shady shit.
We want to hear about the chili peppers and the eyeshadow. Like, does that stuff really happen?
I don't know if it happens that much anymore. Mm-hmm. I do remember hearing stories about back in the day, you know, girls would take a glass bottle and shave it into their powder, you know, mm-hmm. so when they'd go to powder their face, you know, they'd have tiny blood pricks all over. Or they would put Visine in their drink so they'd shit themselves on stage, or, you know, take a razor blade through their beaded gown and just slash so when you'd walk, all the beads would fall off. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of shady shit that goes down, you know, but I don't think it's that bad anymore.
The I'm Googling this, and I guess Visine has a chemical called tetrahydrozoline hydrochloride, which will make you very sick to ingest it. But for some reason, like, if you drop it in your eye, it's not enough because it is going into your body. It's consuming a little bit more than, you know, just a couple of drops. Mm. So to me, I was like, when we were talking about that, I was like, there's no way that Visine's going to make you shoot all over yourself.
Yeah, but I mean, people have been saying this since the 80s. It's something you can do.
It'll definitely, you know, be upsetting to your stomach. And even some people are like asking on the internet, can eye drops be used as a laxative?
Oh, yeah.
But speaking of laxatives, though, no, not laxatives. I heard that girls in the pageant system use milk of magnesia underneath their foundation to stop them from sweating. Is that a good technique to do? Because I'm a sweater.
It is. It's an old school technique. Actually, Beyonce's makeup artist uses it on her as well.
Oh, wow. Because, yeah, so I mean, she's moving around so much. I'm sure her face is sweating a lot.
Yeah, there's lots of little neat tips and tricks you can use.
Do you use that?
I'm not a sweaty person.
Okay. Yeah, I'm there is other products, and I guess there you know, as early as September 2016, there was articles about Beyonce wearing milk of magnesia. So it is a thing that she used.
Well,
she admitted
I mean, she's also under those hot stage lights, you know, night. She does a lot of dancing, so. You know, she needs something like that to prevent her makeup from sweating off. I usually use just a setting spray. Urban Decay makes a really good one called All Nighter, and that sets your makeup. There's also, I can't remember the name of it, but Mama Tits in Puerto Vallarta, she uses it, and she said it encases your face in marble.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, my day, we just use Aquanet and spray it on our faces. You know,
yeah. I mean, I used to do that too, but it's so bad for your skin.
Oh, is it? Oh shit! Too late for me. Yeah, that's what I used to use to hold the glitter on it. You know,
that was
makeup.
Yeah,
yeah. So I would put on my foundation. I put on my concealer, foundation, powder, contour, and then on the very top, I would throw some translucent glitter and hairspray, and I look like I was made out of crystal labasia.
Ooh.
And what'd you make of RuPaul on Saturday Night Live? A lot of people are very moved, actually, by the experience of watching one of the most famous drag queens in history to showcase a show like that last night. Varla Jean Merman wrote, "When RuPaul came out on stage, tears streamed down my face because I was looking at her. Drag is a huge part of my life. And to see him command the stage, it's something very few gay people have done, much less drag icons. It meant so much to me than I would realize. Those of us who started doing drag before it was cool or career, when it was actually a weirdo thing that went against your character, can be proud in the fact that the world has finally caught up. They used to think we were all just degenerates, and many still are. But that's this true. Is a milestone. Brava, bravo, filled with pride.
It's true, you know, and I have the utmost respect for Varla Jean Merman. I worked with her in Provincetown the past two summers, and just a wonderful gem of a person. I think RuPaul, she made history last night. We, you know, whether you love her or hate her, or a little bit of both, to see a black gay man who, against all odds, you know, figured out the game in Hollywood, and is now breaking down even more doors for future queer people. That's an amazing thing.
Yeah, undoubtedly. And part of it is I do take question this idea that, you know, that success in entertainment is a riddle that needs to be solved, because it all puts all the responsibility on the person solving the riddle. And sometimes, you know, people have just good luck and are lucky to be at the right place at the right time or fortuitous. And certainly, you know, RuPaul has made a lot of attempts to be successful in entertainment and not succeeded. So, you know, for if anything we can learn about RuPaul's success is that stick to it, girl, and maybe when you're a senior citizen, you'll get on Saturday Night Live.
You can do it too. Yeah, I mean, Morgan Freeman didn't get his first major role until he was, I believe, 52.
Wow.
And, you know, things could have gone wrong for RuPaul, you know. RuPaul could have struggled and not made it big and suffered profoundly, you know. So it is some luck and some perseverance and some, working on your skills. But
well, like she says, it's, you know, there's windows for drag that kind of open and close, and you do it and you don't do it. But the same is true, you know, of any type of being an entertainer. Sometimes you're hot, sometimes you're not. But, you know, if you keep on going through it and keep on doing it, it's probably going to work out for you in the end. Perseverance is the number one thing.
It's good to see RuPaul shine as a comedian, though, you know, and not just as a host of a program. Mm-hmm. I feel like AJ and the Queen and RuPaul on Saturday Night Live, to me, is like the RuPaul I've been waiting for like 15 years. I was such a fan of Star Booty, and nobody got to see Star Booty, and the people that got to see it weren't appreciated of it. And it was nice to see RuPaul actually shining as a comedian and seeing heterosexual people, white people laughing. And, you know, I'm surprised that a lot of people actually got the jokes. Like there was a lot of references, drag references, queer references in the show. And I was just like, wow, I guess people do know what that means, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love the segment with Pete Davidson where she put him in drag. I thought it was hilarious. I thought she looked amazing. I wish she had looked that way when she walked out to host the show, you know, because she never does anything in drag anymore. But, you know, it's also a live show. And I think after the Project Runway debacle, she's not taking any chances on being improperly lit. Or
there was a skit that where she did dress up as a woman, as a temp who went out to dinner.
Yeah, she went out to dinner with people.
Yeah, but I mean, she slapped on some lipstick and glasses.
Yes, that was character drag. This was not like the image of RuPaul drag.
Yeah, I mean, she has a brand to protect, and if she can't display that character in in the way that the brand is supposed to be, she's not going to do it. I mean, he's a very astute businessman. I have mixed feelings about RuPaul personally because of comments he's made about trans people and his attitude towards trans entertainers, but it doesn't mean that I don't respect him and the work that he has put in. And he's created an industry that employs thousands of people, myself included, and really moved the dial in the conversation for queer people in America.
Would you say RuPaul has made drag, I mean, certainly more accessible to Americans, but for somebody who's not been on Drag Race, has the rising tide lifted all ships, or is it just some ships?
I would say some ships. I was very lucky to have a career in pageantry that got me a lot of travel, a lot of work, and made a lot of connections. So, you know, when RuPaul kind of devoured the industry and took it over, I was very lucky to still work and to be employed and to be friends with a lot of the contestants that have walked through the workroom doors. So I'm one of few who's managed to stay afloat. But overall, it has made it harder for entertainers who are not on Drag Race to get those opportunities in film or television or with major brand companies, things like that. And it's also created this huge community of drag queens. You know, there used to only be 20, 30 well-known, you know, like Coco Peru, Lady Bunny, RuPaul Varla, Jackie B, and now there's millions of them. They're like gremlins.
Gremlins and wigs.
And I'm sure that the generation before me said the same thing about me. A lot of them, they all look the same to me. It's like they watch the same makeup tutorial. They slapped on the same wig and dance costume. They throw themselves on the floor and they want to get paid top dollar for it.
Yeah. Are you a Trixie queen, a Bianca queen, or are you a Courtney act? Like, it's all the same kind of look, yeah.
What I find interesting about the drag queens that want to be like Bianca Del Rio is that they're all out, they're brand, and they're very business-oriented, so they think about comedy as a business move, and their idea of comedy is just being mean and catty and dry. And when you imitate what they do, they're like, how could you be so cruel and mean to me? And you're like, but you're the one who's, you know, setting the tone and stuff.
People like Bianca and Trixie, they have a way of delivering a snarky punchline that is just so hilarious. Coming from anybody else, it would be like, what the fuck did you just say to me?
You can accept it from them. And that's part of the power of drag, too. Like, if they were outside of, like, if they weren't in drag, you wouldn't take it as much. There's that power of that costume.
I'll tell you this. It's like, you know, Brian Ferkus, Trixie Mattel, she tried a long time for as a career as a folk musician. And that sassy sense of humor didn't go over so well out of drag. And, you know, dressing up as this demented Mexican puppet / Barbie doll certainly, you know, made her a household name. In the skit with Pete Davidson, whose famous character is Chad, this is an ongoing thing on Saturday Night Live. You know, people are just like fall mysteriously in love with Chad. And Chad's very like, okay, whatever, sure, no big deal. Yeah. And I didn't realize that Pete Davidson had so many tattoos underneath that shirt.
He also supposedly has a big dong.
Oh.
Yeah, he could get it.
Yeah, they show that in the skit. RuPaul asks him to tuck, and he comes out with this mound. And I'm just like, I don't think that was anything staged. And then he throws himself on, he's trying to teach him a sissy that walk, to walk in heels. And then Chad, Pete Davidson, throws himself on a table full of snacks. And I just thought that was one of the funniest things I've ever seen was with drag.
And I was just trying to look at him in drag. And I was like, who does he remind me of in drag? And I was just like, is it Roxy? I'm like, I don't know.
Guessing probably Raven did both RuPaul and Pete Davidson's makeup in that scene. Because they look awfully the same, you know? So it's probably the same artist. Maybe. And it's probably Raven doing that.
And Raven did go to New York. Maybe you can help us with this. Lady Bunny asked us in the early 2000s, she said that RuPaul came to Chicago and performed at one of the outdoor festivals here in Boys Town and did not want to shave. So did half drag on the upper part of their head, like the eyes and the nose and stuff like that, and put some foundation upon the beard below, and then insisted to only be lit from above so that you couldn't see the beard. Now, it's the early 2000s. We didn't have cell phones and stuff like that, but certainly somebody must have videotaped this somewhere. Do you know anybody who might have that videotape? Because Lady Bunny really wants to see it.
Why are you such a shady lady, Mark Felian? Jesus.
Chicago, if
coming
you're listening.
Coming for me, coming for RuPaul. But where is the video around Aurora? Do you know? Have you heard this story before?
I have not.
So it, maybe Lady Bunny just trying to start shit, and she knows you're going to be asking people about it. She's just fucking with you.
Is that it?
Maybe.
I believe. You know, I believe
her quaaludes probably kicked in by the time she got to you.
I thought that RuPaul on Saturday Night Live was great, showcasing himself, especially like the reading the library skit. Mm-hmm. It was great to see RuPaul owning the comedy center stage, shining. Taking the whole idea of reading to children literally was very, very funny. I felt the weakest of all the skits was the check splitting and the old New York talk show. Whereas I felt that RuPaul really relied on the women on Saturday Night Live to sustain himself as a comedian. I thought Thirsty Cops was really...
Thirsty Cops was really good.
Yeah. Which,
that was basically her star booty character, right? Basically, yes. She's been doing that same. And that's the thing is, like, RuPaul didn't really push any chops there or anything like that. Like, that whole cops thing, like, that's who her drag persona often is. It's like this, you know, over-the-top wild lady who hits on people. Even though she wasn't dressed as Star Booty, that was basically Star Booty.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She totally encapsulated that character. And I mean, like I said, I respect what RuPaul's done. I thought he did a great job on the show. I just, for me personally, I wish he had kinder things to say about people like myself.
How do we get him there? How do we help just him kidnap along RuPaul. This path? I mean, what do you think? What's holding him? What's
you
holding
got?
Him
you
back?
Girls need to get together, 9 to 5 style, and kidnap RuPaul and do a sadomasochistic torture in her not the bougie home, her office apartment.
Yeah,
whatever. RuPaul's like 6 different places, so you can. She has a ranch in Wyoming too.
She does.
Because she saw Brokeback Mountain and said, that's a good idea.
Well, her husband's rancher. Yeah.
And so you could kidnap RuPaul and put her in the home, and then one of you girls dresses up as RuPaul.
Takes over, makes all the changes at RuPaul's Drag Race. And then,
and then RuPaul comes back and wins, like, a Pulitzer Prize.
It's a much more pleasant way to live.
Because that was the plot of 9 to 5, right? Mm-hmm. Mr. Hart leaves, and the women bring in feminism into the corporate workplace and make feminism a wonderful economic system for everybody, and bringing universal health care.
That a girl.
They
but
actually
now if RuPaul goes missing, they're going to listen to this and automatically assume it's me.
Well, if the shoe fits. What did you think about Justin Bieber? Justin Bieber looking like an adult finally on Saturday Night Live. He's had some trouble with drugs and alcohol, and most recently, his publicist said he'd been fighting mononucleosis.
Lyme disease, right?
Or Lyme disease and stuff. I'm like, don't you get Lyme disease like going hunting or something? From deer ticks.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as his appearance, I miss stars looking like stars. He kind of looked like he just rolled out of bed in some baggy clothes and said, fuck it. But, you know, the world of celebrities, you know, it's very unique, because here you have a 15-year-old boy who was thrown into the public eye of the entire world. And, you know, you've got fans, you've got stalkers, you've got magazines picking you apart, your entire appearance and your life. And you have a boy who's still going through puberty trying to figure himself out. And a lot of celebrities, to cope with that pressure and that stress, they do turn to, you know, different vices, whether it be drugs, alcohol, sex, what have you. And, you know, the fact that he's... actually taken action to pursue sobriety and address his health issues publicly and try and turn his life around, I think is commendable.
What'd you make about the bisexual lighting in the second skit? Everyone's like going, Justin Bieber's trying to come out as bi.
He's married, ladies. Sorry.
He's married?
Just because you're married does not make you not bisexual.
No, but I don't think he is.
You don't think there was anything to it? There was no like coded meaning or was it that they were trying, because, you know, it was a very queer show, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it was just like the producers or the designers were trying to appeal on a subconscious level to people who are aware that turquoise, blue and pink lighting is a code for something.
Yeah. Well, also, too, you know, I mean, it's RuPaul and Justin Bieber because they're trying to appeal to little girls, because that's who their audience is, right? For the most
teenage
part. Teenage girls. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, teenage girls, what do they like? Bisexual lighting.
And they're starting to feel things. They're trying to explore. You know, I think to be a young woman in this day and age is a bit gender fluid and gender non-binary and sexually fluid place to be. Still, there's a lot of sexism in society, and we don't really fully embrace what it means to be a young woman. And so as you mature and you start to feel things, you're starting to explore who you are as a person. So, you know, it makes sense that Justin Bieber and RuPaul would be very popular with teenage girls.
Well, I love that now in our culture, we can be so fluid. You know, even dating as a trans person is different now. You know, it used to be nobody wanted to. They were afraid to go in public. You know, they were afraid of what people mm-hmm. would think or what they would say, no matter how passable. I hate that word, but, you know, no matter how passable in public you were. And now, you know, I go out on dates all the time, you know, with guys. It's just changed. And you know, the fact that a decade ago, we didn't have terms like gender fluid, non-binary. You know, that it's rapidly changing. And you know, whatever he likes, whatever floats his boat, go for it. I mean, I've dated people of all stripes, trans men, non-binary people, you know, gay men, straight men, whatever. As long as you're a good person and we have fun, you treat me well.
Was there anything that you wanted to see RuPaul do on Saturday Night Live that you didn't get to see, or you want were left wanting more of?
No, I think she did fine.
So if RuPaul in future seasons does, and I just have a hard time seeing Drag Race continue without including assigned female at birth performers and trans women and trans men, do you think it's going to make up for excluding trans women all these years? Or what do you think the reaction is going to be?
I think it would certainly be a step in the right direction. I think it would behoove them to, you know, start listening to their audience and you know, that is ever changing. And there's so many young kids, many of which I'm sure are trans, gender nonconforming, you know, that have grown up with that show and they watch that show and they're constantly looking for people on television that look like them, that represent them. And outside of shows like Pose, there's nobody that has a bigger and better platform to explain those kinds of issues. And, you know, not only that, but give trans people a platform to show their talents and better their own lives than RuPaul's Drag Race.
Isn't trans visibility and acceptance more important than any television show? Do we need to rely on television and films to bring about change?
Well, I mean, look, you can't thrust it all on one program. It's just one program out of many. And right now in Hollywood, one of the reasons I moved out here is because there's a golden age of opportunity happening for trans people. You have trans actors who are appearing in shows on Stars, on Showtime, on primetime television, and movies and and it's just they're adding more and more every day. We still don't have as much visibility as we should. And granted, there are still a lot of struggles to go through. For example, my agent won't recommend me for projects unless the projects are trans-related. So I can't even play the maid unless the maid is trans.
What's the logic there?
Which is something we're fighting. It's still very hard to be accepted in Hollywood being trans, you know, for people to accept you as just another woman, you know, which is what I would love to be treated as. When I walk into an audition, I want them to look at my talent and what I can give to the character and not for what I was born as, or, you know, what my anatomy is.
Well, best of luck to you. You know, your videos on YouTube, people can watch them through your YouTube channel.
They sure can. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook.
What's
Aurora
the
Sexton.
YouTube? It's Aurora Sexton.
It's all Aurora Sexton. Okay.
Do you want to say that again? So it's not so awkward. Hey, people can check out your videos on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
I say, at Aurora Sexton.
Oh, shit. Yes, you can.
Go ahead.
Cut,
go.
Redo.
Yeah.
Yes.
People can check out. Go ahead. Sorry. This is like a, we're trying to enter an elevator.
I can do it for you.
Yeah.
Round three.
You can check out Aurora Sexton on YouTube and all other handles at Aurora Sexton.
Like the lights, Northern Lights, and sex with a lot of it.
Aurora is the goddess
and
of the
Disney
dawn.
Disney princess.
Yeah.
And Sexton is because you like a lot of sex.
Tons of sex. Get it?
Get it. Tons.
So what kind of a lady do you think I am?
A popular girl.
I'm everyone.
Hey, hey, hey.
Aurora, it's so good talking to you.
Oh, it's always a pleasure talking to you boys. Whenever you come out to LA, hit me up. We'll go for poke bowls and swing on poles.
How did you know that I love poke bowls?
I'm a psychic.
From the last podcast we recorded.
Make it. Aurora, so good talking to you. Definitely will hold you to that poke bowl date. Save some raw salmon for me, love.
Mm. Oh, it's all for you, darling.
Take care, sweetie.
Thank you, guys.
Aurora Sexton lives in Los Angeles, California. You can follow her on social media. Aurora like the lights, Sexton like a ton of sex.
Mm-hmm.
And we are on social media, Feast of Fun. Everywhere you can have fun, you can have Feast of Fun. Subscribe to us where fine podcasts are found. And if you like our show, give us a review. And if you don't like our show, go fuck yourself. No,
accept
feedback.
Would you give a review at Apple, right?
Yeah, Apple Podcasts. You can write reviews, Google Podcasts as well. Anywhere, most podcast directories have reviews as well. And we do actually want to hear your feedback, your constructive feedback, how we can improve and grow. Send us an email, mail@feastoffun.com. Your thoughts and ideas are always welcome. And we love to hear from you.
Yes. You're not alone in this. This podcast is, you know, you have some ownership here. You're part of the show. The people that listen to the show and have listened to the show for 15 years. Right now, we're on our 16th season.
That's amazing.
And we couldn't do it without listeners just like you have come forward and said, hey, I love the show. I want to support the show. I'm going to write a review. I'm going to tweet about the show. Or I'm going to become a Plus member at feastoffun.com/plus. Because your contribution to the show, your financial support of the show is what makes this show happen.
We're also on Patreon, patreon.com/feastoffun, where you can get delicious behind-the-scenes moments and crumbs and goodies into the making of Feast of Fun and our web series, Cooking with Drag Queens, as well as we are launching two new podcasts.
Yes.
Coming soon is Feast of Fun, The Legendary Shows, where we revisit some of our most popular podcasts in the last 15 years, and all our Cooking with Drag Queens and crumbs and raw footage is going to be available also as a podcast on Apple Podcasts, everywhere you can subscribe to a video podcast. I know it's a little weird because you're like, oh, can I just go to YouTube? The thing about YouTube is that you may be subscribed to a channel and you may hit that bell button, but you still might not get the videos you want to see. So you have to be remembering to look for them. And the nice thing about subscribing to us on Patreon or on Apple Podcasts and is you'll never miss a delicious video or audio program whenever we post it up. So you get a notification for that.
It's right there.
Remember, folks, there are many ways to say I love you.
Aww.
And we love you for listening to the show. We feel your appreciation and your love. And I love you, Mark.
I love you, too. And I want to thank Aurora for coming on the podcast. I love guests like her, and I hope she can come back again soon.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.